News.
I'm Christopher Ledden. This is The Connection. The idea for the KIPP Charter School came from a road trip that our guest Michael Feinberg took with a college friend. They were both frustrated public school teachers in Houston, and then they decided to start their own school. KIPP is a charter school, which is to say a public school run as if it were private. These schools are all the rage now. Politicians and both presidential candidates are falling all over themselves to praise the idea. KIPP sounds more like a military school than the typical public or private school. Their idea is a highly structured curriculum, conduct codes, a long school day, 9.5 hours, and rigorous disciplinary standards. Students are caught misbehaving. They have to wear their KIPP t-shirts inside out. Girls can't wear makeup. Boys can't wear hats. KIPPsters wrap their multiplication tables and they chant slogans on the playground. Everyone plays in the orchestra, and every seventh grader learns algebra, period. We're talking about a charter school that works this hour. Connection listeners, would you send your kid to a KIPP school? Does the militaristic discipline scare you? Or is it what gets the job done? 1-800-423-8255 makes the Knowledge is Power connection. 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us from a studio in Houston are Michael Feinberg, who's co-founder of KIPP Academy and the CEO of the KIPP Foundation, and also Sam Lopez, former teacher, now principal of KIPP Academy in Houston. Good day, Michael Feinberg and Sam Lopez. I wish you know there are so many things you folks do. Isolate two or three absolutely essential ones that make it work, if you would.
Well, first off, good morning. Thank you for having us
Welcome.
On this morning. We
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Likewise. Good morning.
This is Mike Feinberg. We the premise of the school is that there are no shortcuts. And I think we, as much as possible, eliminate all the various variables that have been around for too long now about why children can't learn. And we focus on the constants that make them do learn. And one of the biggest things we probably do is that we have a longer school day, a longer school year, so I have a lot more time on task to make sure kids that are behind get caught up and kids that are ahead get accelerated and learn what they need to learn, not to pass minimal skills, but to go off to college, which is our goal for all our children.
Another thing that we do that we concentrate on is making sure that teachers have the teaching freedom. Other schools, especially throughout the state of Texas, they limit them. They force our teachers to teach to the standardized test, which is the TOS test, the Texas Assessment of Academic Skills. And we give the teachers the freedom to teach the way teaching. They can teach their curriculum any way they want to. They'll still get the job done. We don't force them to teach this test. And that's one thing we do. We offer academic freedom to our teachers.
There are different perspectives on these charter schools in general. Some people think of them as private schools and the enemy of public education. Some people think of them, no, these are public schools, the real thing. How do you think of them in the first place?
Oh, we are definitely public schools. We are accountable to the public. We are accountable to the state. We are accountable to the families of the kids. 90% of the money that we spend at KIPP is our public dollars from the state and the federal government. So we definitely consider it public schools. We don't have quite as much of the bureaucracy and red tape that other schools and districts have to deal with. But I think it's actually neat that we work in conjunction with those schools. We're kind of almost a lab environment for those other schools and showing what can happen. We can experiment a little bit more.
In terms of what you do and can do, who you hire, what you teach, what you set as priorities or rules or uniforms or hours, how are you different from the standard public school? Just in making it work, run.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have more control over staff. First off, certification does not have to be a requirement. Even though most of our teachers are certified, we are more flexible in finding the great educators out there. We don't necessarily have to follow certification guidelines. Also, teachers don't have tenure, so teachers who do a great job are rewarded heavily, and teachers that don't do a good job don't stay there. We also have more control over the budget. We get per pupil allocations, and we can spend that money any way we want to, which means that we don't have much of a administration or bureaucracy. Most of our dollars go directly to the classrooms, to the kids.
In short, you're not answerable to the downtown, curriculum or budget authority, and you're not answerable to the union either.
No, we're not. We are responsible, and we have to answer to the state of Texas.
Like any other typical school district in the state of Texas.
Well, I like you say, yes, we're public schools and we're answerable to the society, to parents, and to kids. You didn't say to the city of Houston superintendent or the head of the teachers union, which would be the first answer from most public school managers in the country.
Right, and that certainly is where one of the differences is.
Okay, now, you're different from an awful lot of other charter schools. You're very military. It's tough, tough, tough. Explain some of those choices that you've made that make yours quite different from a lot of other charter schools.
It's interesting that you use the word military, because we don't, you know, it paints a picture that's, I don't think, quite accurate. If you go to KIPP right now, you walk around and see 323 children all with big smiles on their faces. They're absolutely loving it. It's not, there is discipline at the school. The discipline is not there for the sake of having discipline. Once again, the focus is on learning and going to college, which means that there is discipline in place to make sure that there is focus at all times in the classrooms. But it's not quite militaristic like it was described.
Hmm.
I mean, I think we follow basically, I would say the school mirrors what happens in most families' homes and what happens out there in life. And that is that there are expectations that are put forth to the children. When they do the right thing, good things happen. When they do the wrong thing, there are consequences. And as much as possible, we try to mirror what goes on in the homes and mirror what needs to happen in life to be successful.
Let's just say there's a rigor, starting with the uniforms and the rules and the hours, that are expected to be taken seriously. There are not that many places in our world, much less our education world, where that applies.
I'm sorry?
Forgive me. I didn't mean to stamp it as a kind of boot camp, much less to make it sound grim. But you do have rules and standards, and you enforce them.
Sure. Well, I mean, and once again, it's the mirror on what happens. In public education, we could easily create a bubble where everything is fair, where kids artificially are pumped up with self-esteem all day long, where the work to them to be tough, where everything is at an equal level. But that is not what happens, as we know, out there when it's time to apply to college or it's time to get a job out there in the real world. You know, where in my job right now and your job and everyone else is listening right now, if we decide to stop doing our work or start treating our coworkers in a very bad way, probably we're not going to keep our jobs, and there's going to be consequences for that. We're trying to prepare our kids to be able to be contributing members in our society.
The idea is out there after 6 or 8 years of these charter school stories that if a handful of ambitious teachers got together without a rule book, without union restriction, without a superintendent bearing down on their backs, with aspiring parents, and all parents do aspire for their children, simply get it together and said, listen, let's make a school that's, as you say, built on common sense principles of getting a job done. It could happen everywhere. Do you believe that?
It absolutely could. There's no reason why it can't. And as long as there is, there still has to be an accountability measure in place. I don't think we want to create a situation where people can absolutely run wild, do whatever they want in public schools or in schools. The parents should feel there's some sort of agency or organization that is monitoring the schools, making sure that they are doing a good job and are sticking to their plan that they applied for when they got their charter in the first place.
There's a lot of experience out there to suggest that if you do certain very simple things, and you're doing them obviously, but long day, a long school year, enforced parental involvement with homework, with engagement in the actual education of the kids, and some element of choice. Kids are there because they want to be there. Teachers are there because they want to join a team. You can solve most of the performance problems in public education. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. I certainly believe that's correct. To expand on that a little bit, we have six pillars that we feel are in place to be able to provide a quality education, set up a quality school. And those six pillars, you highlighted most of them already. We believe there should be an extended school day, an extended school year. We believe there should be a contract or some sort of agreement between the parents, students, and teachers where everyone understands each other's expectations. We believe that there should be an effective school leader who has control over staff and control over the budget. We feel there should be incentives and disincentives in place for the kids as well as for the teachers. We also believe that there should be high expectations that are clearly defined and great results which are measurable. And we think if you dress up those six pillars in any way, shape, or form, the kids are just going to knock it out of the park and do a terrific job.
Why aren't we doing it all over the country? We've known these principles well. I mean, maybe forever, but certainly in the last 6 or 8, 10 years, they've been been pretty well establishable that these kinds of principles will turn around a school very fast. Get the union and the city bureaucracy out of the way, and let the teachers with the parents run the program.
Well, I think, Christopher, I think one other point to make is we're not adversaries to the unions. In fact, I think we're working with the unions and promoting the basic ideals of creating a much more
not when you eliminate tenure.
Well, true. Now we eliminate tenure, but when you consider that KIPP teachers are paid 20% more than the teachers in the local district, and that they also are treated much more like professionals, and they are given many more perks at our school and much more freedom. Those are some of the basic values that the unions are pushing for teachers all over the country that we're trying to promote.
Fascinating. 1-800-423-8255. We're talking with the founders and prime movers of the KIPP, which is to say Knowledge is Power program school in Houston. They were featured at the Republican convention. They may be the kind of poster child children for George Bush's idea of education reform. We have to confront the taunt that George Bush spends less, Texas spends less per capita on public education than almost all the states in the country. I don't know exactly how to fit that in, but we must. The phone is 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking about schools that work, charter schools specifically, run with public money, with a public answerability, and private management, in effect, a principal who calls the shots on staffing and on the allocation of the budget. Steve Wilson joins us by phone. He's the CEO and founder of Advantage Schools, which is a national charter school management company. Steve Wilson, there are a lot of questions here. First of all, I'd love your take on KIPP, but I got to ask you why, in charter schools in general, the performance record has not been so spectacular. What's your take on KIPP?
Oh, my take on KIPP is wonderfully positive, Chris. Overall, our design has many similar features to what KIPP is doing. I think if you look at charter schools in urban areas, they share common features, often veering towards uniforms, a very clear order, sense of safety and security for students, very high, crisply articulated missions and expectations. Those are common characteristics of charter schools in urban areas. So I say bravo. This is exactly what we should be doing. As far as the other half of your question, charter schools have mixed results, although on balance positive, because so many of them, especially early on in the movement, were based on faddish educational ideas that were without research basis. And I think we're seeing far fewer of those initiatives going forward in the movement as educators, founders of charter schools, increasingly turn towards these proven principles.
Which fads are you talking about, Steve?
Pardon?
Which fads are you talking about?
Oh, well, a lot of the more progressivist notions, the idea that children should learn and pursue only what interests them at that particular moment, some of the multiple forms of intelligence ideas, although well-intentioned, are pernicious because they suggest that some students who might be labeled as having one kind of intelligence don't really need to be exposed to the same rigorous academic curriculum that good schools have always offered. Some of those kinds of ideas have actually harmed children significantly, but I think we're moving away from that.
And what? Steve, if I can add to that too, I think also the idea of accountability is important too. All the charter schools in this country are out there on their own, being judged on their own merit, where schools in districts sometimes can hide within a large district and a large bureaucracy. I don't think there's anything wrong with the idea of being able to find what charter schools are not doing well and making sure that they don't continue to exist.
I couldn't agree more. Charter schools have never been about saying that every one of these schools has to succeed in order to prove that the idea is worthwhile. It's always been about letting 1,000 flowers bloom, mm-hmm. and then seeing which work and then expanding those and doing more of them and letting the others move on and be closed, which is a whole lot better than what happens in public schools, which is that failing schools are always sustained and nothing ever happens to them.
The sixth mm-hmm. pillar at the KIPP school, though, Steve, is great results, and the charter schools don't have spectacularly great results, do they?
Oh, well, absolutely. Well, Chris, you know, you have often featured some extraordinarily successful charter schools, such as the Pacific Rim Academy here in Boston or the City on a Hill School and so on. Our school in Houston, which has about 700 students and started last year, The students gained from the fall to the spring, just in their first year, 14 points on the national standardized Stanford test. So they went from significantly below the national average to just about the national average, a correction that occurred, as I said, just in 1 year.
When you say our school, you're not talking about the Kip school, are you?
No, no, but I'm talking about a school which incidentally has many common features. It has a research-proven curriculum that all teachers benefit from. It has uniforms for all students. It has a code of conduct that is signed by teachers and parents and students. It has many of the things that that Michael and Sam have been speaking about. It's these, as you say, are principles that have been known for some time. Charter schools simply provide a setting which is unconstrained, as you describe, and people go and implement these ideas.
And highlight again the great results that you want to brag about at that school.
I do. What about them?
Yeah, just highlight them.
Oh, yes. Well, as I said, these are students that are coming in at the 32nd percentile and left at the end of the year at the 47th percentile. And we're seeing that across our network of schools. We have about 10,000 students in our schools, all using the same urban design, all in urban location, many of them really inner city locations. We saw on average about a 7% percentile point gain, which may not sound like a lot, but an urban superintendent would really jump for joy and declare victory if he saw a 1 or 2 percentile point gain in a urban school system. So this is
how long is your school day?
It is longer, absolutely. It's an hour longer. It's not as long as the KIPP program, but it's an hour longer than the regular school day, and it's 20 more days of instruction a year. Time on task, as they said, absolutely does matter. But it's just one thing. You also have to have these very high, crisp expectations. You have to have an effective code of conduct or a behavior system. Ours is based on a relentless recognition of positive accomplishments. Teachers are explicitly trained to provide 4 positive interactions for every 1 negative one. That may seem very deliberate, but it really creates a positive culture. You know, teachers so often make the mistake of an endless stream of don't statements, stop doing this, stop doing that. That doesn't work. You have to create a positive environment.
Hmm. Stand by for calls, if you would. Steve Wilson, but also Sam Lopez and Michael Feinberg, co-founders of the KIPP School, the KIPP Academy in Houston. 1-800-423-8255 makes the KIPP connection. Jill is in Louisville, Kentucky.
Good morning.
Morning, Jill. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I saw the piece about Mr. Feinberg and the KIPP program on 60 Minutes, and let me just say I applaud him and his partners for doing an extraordinary job. There was
Thank you.
Beautiful,
Thank you.
Well-spoken, wonderfully articulate young ladies on there who were all talking about the programs and how they had managed to get into these what sounded like very exclusive schools upon having graduated. And I was curious if there was any sort of support network for them once they leave the KIPP program. It seems like they're going to really be kind of stepping into new waters. I'm assuming that most of the kids that end up at these private prep schools are from very different backgrounds than those of your students.
Yes, what we've done, we've created a position that we have one of our staff members, Julene Moore, who actually offers a support system. She tracks the children down. She's there available for phone calls. She makes sure the students are well set in the schools. She visits them. She talks to them through email, through phone conversations. She talks to the families. So there's a support network there. If these kids have questions or having trouble adjusting, they can always call our school, and we're still there to give them a helping hand.
That's fantastic.
So we've sat there. We've created this program where not only are we going to help them through the first year at the schools, but through until they get to college. Our mission is to get them to college, so we're going to have a support system built in to get them to college. Mm-hmm. We're going to do everything that we can to help them.
Jill, thank you for the call. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Schools That Work connection. Alan is on the line.
Hello.
Hello, Alan. Welcome.
Hi. Yeah, well, actually, I went to military school for 4 years, and then my senior year I went to Brown, which is a magnet school here in Louisville, Kentucky, and my mom's a public school art teacher in Houston. So,
You're qualified. Go ahead.
Right. I really like the aspect of longer class periods and teacher freedoms and stuff like that, but I was a little bit worried about the militant aspect of it, the uniformity of uniforms kind of leads to uniformity of ideas and confirmation in all areas, and also the possibility of every kid going to college Doesn't that make it kind of like an extended high school? I'm actually having a difficult time affording my junior year of college, which is coming up right now. So I guess I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
Alan, well, thank you.
First, on affordability, what we're finding is that for our kids, if they're willing to step it up and work this hard, there's a lot of resources out there that are going to help them. Last year's eighth grade class earned over $3 million in scholarships to get to various private schools around Houston, around the country. In terms of the conformity of ideas, Alan, I agree with you. Of course, if we're really truly preparing kids to for college, we're preparing them how to be thinkers and how to think critically and think analytically, which we do. Just because they all have on the same color shirt doesn't mean that they all have to have the same thoughts in their brains, and the teachers at KIPP are all trained and all really work on making them critical thinkers and making them very good analyzers in life.
Hmm. Alan, thank you. 1-800-423-TALK is the phone. Laura is on the line.
Hi. I had wanted to ask if kids have trouble with the learning, what happens very concretely, because this all sounds great, and when you talk in generalities and when you talk about high expectations, it all sounds wonderful, but when you get kids and they have particular problems, first of all, I notice that when kids are having trouble learning, sometimes they start misbehaving also, and what are the consequences, and what are the consequences when the parents don't do their part? What happens to the kids? And, I mean, when the parents don't fulfill whatever you think their obligations are or whatever they contract for?
Those are all really good questions.
Start with the parent point, if you would.
Sure. Well, I think everything we do at KIPP is designed to, as we talked about at the beginning, eliminate the variables and be the constant. And the caller brought up lots of good reasons why kids are not learning at school. Either they're having trouble, they're not behaving, the parents aren't working at home to work with the schools. And as much as possible, we have a lot of different things in place to help. First off, the longer school day means we get the kids longer every day, so we get to have more time with them. We get to do some one-on-one tutoring with them at various points in the day as well. All the kids also have all the teachers' home phone numbers and cell phone numbers. So if they're at home and the parents aren't doing their share, that's no excuse why the homework can't get done, the kids can't learn. The kids can still get a hold of the teachers 24/7. We also have programs. We call it our Wall Street program, just like our friends on Wall Street that work until the work is done. Kids who are having trouble getting the work done or have no support home, they can actually stay at school all the way until about 9 o'clock at night, working with teachers and other tutors to help them with their homework. So as much as possible, we put things in place to make sure that the kids, no matter what obstacles out there, we will find a way to rise above it and get over it.
Michael Feinberg, Sam Lopez, and also Steve Wilson, who's on the line. I want you to address the question of replicating this kind of success. First, I just want to tell folks you're listening to The Connection. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Schools at Work connection. What is the trick in reproducing this kind of success, and why hasn't it happened a whole lot more in the last 10 years?
I think it's because before charter schools came about, there wasn't an environment where this kind of freedom was allowed to, and experimentation was allowed to happen. Also, second, because while KIPP is based on some very basic, old-fashioned, simple ideas, it's difficult. Teaching from 7 to 5 every day and being on call at night and putting forth the effort and doing whatever it takes is a very difficult thing to do, which is why not everyone is immediately jumping at doing it. Once again, it goes back to the premise of school, that there are no shortcuts. Now, there are teachers out there who are willing to do this and who would like to open up schools like that, and that's what we're going to start working with them.
If I might add to that, this is Stephen Wilson. I think that these programs absolutely are replicable. I think one does have to be cautious about the burnout factor. If a program relies to too great an extent on some superhuman heroic effort on the part of teachers, the amount of time that they're expected to put in and so forth, that might create problems in the longer term. But we have expanded our design now to 15 locations around the country. It has, as I said, similar features to the KIPP design. And it relies on reasonable expectations of what the adults working in the school can achieve. The day is longer, but it's only longer by an hour. There's also less preparation time for teachers because they're working from a very specific curriculum as opposed to going home every night and somehow miraculously coming up with best practice for a lesson to teach fractions or algebra the next day. We provide them with much more specific detailed teaching tools that have been shown to work every time they're used.
Steve Wilson,
that's a very important part of the replication, Chris, is having a academic design that is replicable.
In Massachusetts, where you had a hand in seeding the first round of charter schools, the legislature was kept a very kind of wary eye on just how many there were, and of course the teachers union in general wanted to keep the number down. How many sort of imposed political restrictions are there on the growth of these schools?
Well, that's a real concern. You tend to see across the nation two different camps. In the more liberal, highly unionized states, you tend to have strong laws, but with an immediate, very proximate cap on the number of schools that can be open. In Massachusetts, it was initially the extraordinarily modest figure of 25, recently raised by a small amount. In the more free market, if you will, western states like Texas and Arizona, you tend to have no cap at all. But you also have a lot less money. You have much lower spending levels because of the lack of union involvement.
Steve Wilson, stand by. Michael Feinberg and Sam Lopez, too. We're going to take a short break. The phone's 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about schools that work. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. I'm Christopher Ledden. This is The Connection. Under the general heading of Schools That Work, we're talking with the founders of KIPP Academy. KIPP stands for Knowledge is Power Program. This is a charter school in Houston, Texas. We don't want to say militarized, highly structured, disciplined school, getting remarkable results and enormous publicity, especially after their cameo appearance at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia. Sam Lopez, you're a teacher. I want you to talk about the teacher's experience in a school like this. You're getting more, the typical teacher gets more money with less union protection. There is a risk of burnout. Your cell phone available 24/7, and yet you're in a project you love. What's it like? And what are the trade-offs here? How many of the teachers in this country would really love that situation?
Well, coming from a district that, like I stated earlier, that I was forced to teach through that standardized test, it was a great experience. I could go in and teach world history the way I wanted to teach. I had the resources that I needed. For example, we were studying ancient Egypt and we went through the process of mummification. In my regular school district, all I could do was share with the children what the process was. At KIPP, I was able to purchase some chicken fryers and actually guide the kids through the actual mummification process, where we took the spices, took the salt, and we wrapped the chicken, went through the entire process of what mummification was. It allows you, with the more academic freedom, to provide more hands-on projects. The resources are there. When you need something for your classroom, money is not an object. Money is not an obstacle. You will get whatever you need for your classroom. You get so into your teaching because you don't have those requirements for that state testing that you just get so into it that burnout is not something you think about.
Well, you get into it. A lot of teachers would rather be guaranteed to be out of the building by 2:15 or whatever.
Then that's a problem with the educational system. You know,
and Christopher, if you compare it to other fields of employment out there in society today, working from 7:30 to 5 is not exactly all that crazy compared to other fields, especially when you also consider that teachers are getting at KIPP an hour and a half off every single day for planning, and they still receive about 6 to 7 weeks of vacation during the year.
What are they getting paid? What are they getting paid for a year's work?
The average teacher at KIPP who's been teaching 3 or 4 years probably winds up making around $42,000 or $43,000 compared to about $33,000 in the local school district.
Well, then it may not be working harder than the dot-com millionaires, but they're not getting that kind of money.
No. I still don't feel that we're paying teachers what they should be, but certainly what we're doing is acknowledging it. Not to mention people who are going into education in the first place are not going in there
it's not the salary that attracts you.
They're not going in for the job. Yeah, they're not going stock options.
No, but how many union teachers do you think, if they had the choice to work in a school like yours, would take the raise and accept a certain degree of insecurity for the joy that is so clear in your voice?
It's hard to say exactly how many there are out there, Christopher. I do know that the type of teachers we're talking about are in every single school building in this country. There are cars in the parking lot at 7, there are cars in the parking lot at 5 all across this country. It's about empowering those teachers to teach in the best way that they know how.
I was a former TSTA member, and I left the association, and I work at KIPP, and I have no problem leaving the union behind or the association behind, because what's more important to me is I can teach the way I want to teach, and I have children who are committed to learning and parents who support me, and that's what's important. That matters more than anything else to me as a teacher, that I have that academic freedom, and there are kids who are willing to learn. Every single day I go to my classroom, there are kids who are ready to work, who work very hard at night with their homework and who are ready to learn, and I have the parental support. That's what's important to me. Everything else means nothing to me.
Steve Wilson, you were trying to jump in.
Yeah, I was just going to jump in. I think that the passion is terribly important, and this kind of commitment is not unusual in charter schools to see that kind of dedication. But I do think the question is the correct one. If you're talking about trying to prove that urban education can function at a much higher level of results, we have to think about how we can create a meaningful demonstration of that competes with the 85,000 public schools in America today. And if the design is based on features that can't be replicated, like an extraordinary level of commitment, I think that poses real questions. I think in our design, we have encountered that problem of burnout, and we try and have a system that provides enough tools to the teachers that they can be successful with I won't call it an ordinary level of effort, but an expectation that can be maintained over the long term. And a lot of that has to do with, again, the curriculum tools. We haven't talked about that much this hour, but this is extraordinarily important. We shouldn't be asking teachers to stumble upon best practices, especially if we're trying to scale this. We should be equipping them with proven methods that reliably get those amazing results.
Could I ask?
I agree with what Steve is saying about it. It's not replicable if it requires just a superhuman amount of effort. However, looking at the KIPP model, I don't think it is a superhuman effort. I think if we were just one school in Houston, then maybe it is an anomaly, and maybe that is the case. You know, we've already replicated. There's already another school in the South Bronx, which right now is the highest performing middle school in the Bronx, with one-third of the teachers there have been teaching over 20 years. We also already are working with other teachers around the country to open up schools based on our model. You know, Caleb Dolan and Susan Scheffler are here in the studios right now, and they're at KIPP Houston training to open up, hopefully, schools in Washington, D.C. and North Carolina next year. And we already have interest from over 200 people who do the same. So the people are out there. It's just a matter of providing them the opportunity.
Could I ask you all to critique the presidential candidates, the front runners, especially on the education front? My general sense is that George Bush isn't really ready to face up to the price of making these kind of schools work, and I don't think Al Gore is ready to confront the hassle from the teachers' union that would be involved. In the meantime, they love to pay a kind of lip service to your success. What do you make of what they're saying? Do you want to start with Steve Wilson?
It's not mainly about money, actually, Chris. No country in the world spends more money, possibly with the exception of Canada, depending on what year you look at, than the United States. And yet in international comparisons of student achievement in science and math, which can be compared, we fall very near the bottom. So there is obviously no clear correlation. Having said that, the more resources, the better, and we should make it a still greater national priority. But one of our schools is in Phoenix, Arizona, one of our first and most successful schools in terms of demonstrable test results. As you said, Texas is not a very high-spending location, yet it's our highest-performing school. And these are states that spend dramatically less than, say, a Massachusetts or a New Jersey. So we want more resources, but that's not principally the problem. It's all about the structures and the governance models that are permitted.
I'm asking you to critique what Al Gore and George Bush are saying.
Well, I think that, as you said, I think that Bush's instincts towards more charter schools, more accountability, more market-like models are very, very positive. I'm concerned that Gore will be too beholden to some of the existing education interests to further more charter schools. But as you said at the beginning of the program, both support, in principle, more charter schools. The intellectual debate over the merits of charter schools has been won.
Michael Feinberg, would you critique Gore and Bush?
It's a little hard for me to do that. I've been spending most of my evenings answering homework calls from the kids. But I just know that in Texas, Governor Bush has done a great job of providing opportunities for KIPP to exist as a school, and we're very thankful for that. As far as the presidential platforms, I don't think I'm up to the par of answering that question for you.
Do you want to take a crack at it, Sam? I mean, just as a citizen here.
I spent too much time teaching that I really haven't been abreast of the current political situations. I'm sorry. To me, at the moment, the children are the priority, and I can't comment on it because I'm not well informed on it. I'm sorry.
1-800-423-8255. Under the heading of Schools at Work, we're trying to figure out what is to be learned by the KIPP School in Houston, which has got an enormous attention for its success, for its charter independence, for its uniforms, for its slogans, for its no excuses, no shortcuts ideology. 1-800-423-TALK. Neil is on the line.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling from Boston. I have a family of special needs teachers. I'm just wondering what your program does to address the needs of special needs students in your school, and I'll take my answers off the air.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks, Neil, for calling. Once again, we with the extended day model, we have a lot more time to be able to work with kids who, especially the kids who are behind, who need more time in school. Given the extended day model as well, there's also time during the day for us to bring in some tutors and give kids some extra practice in their reading or math or writing or whatever they're having trouble with, and some one-on-one time as well. Plus, with being able to talk to teachers at night on the phone or stay at school until 9 o'clock, you know, we give the kids what they need. We do not lower expectations for any child, but given the fact that some children are coming to KIPP lower than others, we realize they need a lot more work and they need a lot more help to get to where we want them to be.
What does a special needs student, or any other for that matter, have to do to get into your school in the first place?
They have to sign the commitment to excellence form along with their parents. We have a sheet which outlines all the expectations on teachers, parents, and students, which we all sign. We begin, you know, it's first come, first serve. We don't look at grades or test scores. We don't talk to old schools and teachers about conduct. It's whoever wants to come into school and sign up the form. That's how they enroll in the school until we're all filled up.
Do you worry about a kind of elitism in that formula? I mean, you're choosing kids who are motivated. They and their parents must be motivated, in a sense, to get started. What about kids who aren't?
I think a vast majority of the kids in this country fit into that motivation category. I think the easiest part of this whole KIPP experience has been to recruit the kids. Our biggest competition for these longer hours are reruns of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and Full House after school during the week, and that's a pretty easy competition to convince kids not to do.
Chris, motivation is not a finite resource. This is part of the problem of the way we've thought about public schooling to date, I think. And I think we have to be very careful because it can come across to urban parents in particular as condescending to suggest that some of them are more motivated than others. Everybody wants their child to do well. And one of the most terrible consequences of the way public education has been structured to date is that by not affording any involvement, any choice for parents, we have said, this is one sector of your life and your child's life over which you exert no control. And so, of course, they're not informed choosers, and some of them haven't been motivated. For what purpose would it serve when you have no power to make a choice? Charter schools change all of that. And sure, you have some of the more aggressive early adopters who make the first choices. By the way, their children are often some of the lowest performing. But after that will come waves and waves of additional parents who start enjoying those choices.
1-800... Sorry.
I'm sorry. And what I think HISD has done, the Houston School District, and Dr. Page deserves a lot of credit for this, is when Kip started for the first 2 years, he let us go into the elementary schools and talk to all the fourth graders and offers to all the fourth graders in local schools in the Galton neighborhood in Houston, which is why Dr. Page is not afraid of a little competition for his schools. And I think that's a model that hopefully other superintendents around the country are going to see. The charter school is not something to be feared, but to be work that they can work with them.
1-800-423-8255, the KIPP Academy connection in Houston, Texas. Anthony is listening online in DeLand, Florida. Welcome, Anthony.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How's your reception online?
Very good, actually. Yeah, I used to live in Virginia where you were on NPR there.
I see.
And found you guys on the web when I moved here.
That's the spirit.
Yeah. I wonder, some of what you've said through the course of the show, Chris, about the teachers' unions. I mean, there seems to be an assumption, and at least in your view of things, that the teachers' union will perhaps stand in the way of a model, or the model that KIPP brings. And I wonder if your people from KIPP, if they see it in that way, do they think that their model for teaching at KIPP schools could not work if a teacher's union was present in that school?
It's a good question, Anthony. Just let me clarify. As a political fact, the teachers' unions have fought these things, but I think, in fact, union teachers, teacher teachers, mm-hmm. can find all manner of happiness in these schools. They also run some risk of burnout, but your question is to the Kippsters.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, how do union teachers fare in the KIPP system?
Well, once again,
do you think that not only how do union teachers fare, but do you think that teachers represented by a union could work at KIPP and succeed with the model that you have?
Well, they certainly could, and they do, given the fact that all the teachers at KIPP New York are part of the union in New York City.
Uh-huh.
But they're not making a grievance out of a 10 o'clock call on a cell phone from a kid when they're under the contract off-duty, right?
No, they're not. They're doing it willingly.
Are there conflicts with the union in New York?
Nope. I'm speaking now for the unions, and I probably shouldn't be doing this because I'm not their spokesperson. But the unions are not, you know, opponents of student achievement and doing more to help the kids. They want to do that too. I believe, and I think they view KIPP in New York as a great example of way that parents, teachers, and students all work together, and the way teachers are rewarded for their efforts.
Anthony, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, I guess I would also ask, I mean, if you care to indulge me.
Why not?
Sure. You said that it's a political fact that unions have resisted charter schools, that unions have resisted schools that run along the lines of the KIPP model. I guess I'm not clear on that.
Steve Wilson?
Well, it's certainly true that unions have resisted charter schools rather consistently, and this has been a factor from the beginning. The National Union has upheld the Rhode Island charter school law as exemplary, and in Rhode Island, it's the only law where no charter schools have ever been started under it.
Steve Wilson, I just have to remind the folks and all of us that you're listening to The Connection.
But I think that's changing. As you said, Chris, I think this is where all of this is going. And I think the unions recognize that the existing public schools have an opportunity to compete with some of the successes that are emanating from charter schools. And they're asking questions about how to implement programs like KIPP within their existing structures that can succeed at the same level. So I think that that issue is changing rapidly, and unions are stepping into the fray. In fact, they even a group of union educators proposed to, in fact, the union proposed to start a series of charter schools in Florida recently.
1-800-423-8255, the KIPP connection. Paul is on the line. Hello, Paul.
Yes. I have a question for you, panelists, regarding the goals of all of this. It seems to me that the goals of education are not to get everybody into college. The reality is that most of us will not go to college. And what about the kids who are left behind? And what about the fact that we're emphasizing science and mathematics at the expense of the social sciences, even though we have a country with an enormous prison population and all kinds of social problems? It seems to me, I heard one of your panelists use the phrase, market-like models. And I heard John Silber once say that in an interview that the majority of graduates of Massachusetts high schools couldn't get a job at Fidelity. Is that really the goal? Aren't we really looking to provide an education that makes each person the best person for himself?
Let's hear from the Kipsters.
You're absolutely right, Paul. We get a little bit of echo. College, while for most of our kids and most of, given the fact what they want to do, college is a necessary door to go through to be able to do what they want to do in life. However, I agree, college is not the end-all, be-all, but certainly having the skills to be able to choose to go to college if one wants to is the end-all, be-all. If our kids want to choose to do something else with their academic and character intellectual skills, I think that's terrific too. The important thing that we want to do is we want to empower them to be able to have the freedom to choose, and to choose what's going to make them the happiest in life.
1-800-423-8255. Jackie is on the line.
Oh, good morning to you. I'm just catching the end of your program. I just had a comment about school uniform. I'm from the UK, and everybody wears school uniform in our country. And I just wondered what your panel's comments were.
Is it good or bad for independent thinking?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think it's good because it doesn't distract.
It's absolutely a good thing. It prevents that distraction. It eases the life of parents. It's inexpensive.
Yeah.
It focuses attention back on what learning is occurring and what thoughts are being developed. And there's absolutely no adversity between that idea and free thinking and development of critical thinking skills.
They're T-shirts at KIPP. They're not Eton jackets. And maybe that's important, too. 1-800-423-8255. Jack is on the line. Hello, Jack?
If you need assistance...
Well, don't we all? what does it tell you that, in fact, there are any number of sort of privately hatched competitive models now in these public alternative schools? There are E.D. Hirsch schools. There are Ted Sizer Essential Schools. There are Steve Wilson Advantage Schools. There may be KIPP schools all over the place. There are James Comer It Takes a Village schools all over the place. Whittle schools and whatnot. Is this a happy trend?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. It's because the bottom line, what it's doing is it's providing more opportunities and more choices for parents to decide what the best education is for their child. And I think there's nothing wrong with giving parents as many choices as possible.
Steve Wilson, what do you think?
Absolutely wonderful thing. When you have people like the former president of Yale to praise my competition at the Edison Project, putting together some of the best educator minds in the country to come up with a school design that will benefit thousands of students, that's a much more rational approach to improving schools than just letting a lot of individual little groups flounder trying to come across something that might work better. So we need these kinds of large-scale initiatives like KIPP. This is a wonderful thing for everybody.
You like the sort of 100 flowers bloom idea. Does anyone want to say who's got the brightest blossom out there yet? I mean, among those alternatives we've mentioned?
Let's see what the results are. Let's look at the test scores.
Michael, I hate that to be the only measure.
Well, it's a very important one, Chris, because it tells the truth about what's happening in the school.
One truth. Michael Feinberg, do you want to make the claim that KIPP is number one or will be by 2010?
Well, that certainly is that's our goal. But then again, our goal is not to be number one by ourselves, but be number one with the rest of the schools in public education.
Thank you. Michael Feinberg and Sam Lopez in Houston, Steve Wilson in Boston. Listeners, you can continue the KIPP conversation on our website at theconnection1word.org. Thanks for help today from Nahani Rouse, Tim Monroe, Darren Manoogian, and Kim Bichari. The Connection is produced by Catherine Bidwell, Dan First, Hitesh Hatti, Jill Kaufman, Amy McDonald, Keith Shields, and Will Smith. Mary McGrath is our headmistress. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
This is WBUR. Just ahead on Here and Now, a unique program that pairs hospital patients' friends and families with local hosts, your response to Here and Now's latest poetry challenge, and the pet doctor on what to do when fighting.